from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, bills are read in their entirety on the Senate floor as Democrats retaliate for action on the charter schools bill. In the House, the Judiciary Committee begins to consider amendments to the Coal Mine Safety and Jobs Act, and we'll get a first look at a new documentary about one of West Virginia's most notable politicians on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Fireworks on the Senate floor today as members of the majority party make a controversial move to pull a bill from committee and have it read for the first time on the floor. It's a move we last saw during the 2014 legislative session when Republican members of the House tried to pull an abortion ban bill from the committee and debated on the chamber floor. Without the votes, their action failed, but senior members of the Senate say today's action was something quite different.
The question before the Senate is the adoption of the motion that the Committee on Finance be discharged from further consideration of committee substitute for Senate Bill 14 and the bill be placed on first reading.
Senate President Bill Cole repeated the motion originally made by Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael. The move was one meant to save a bill that was killed during a Senate Finance Committee meeting yesterday. Senate Bill 14 creates public charter schools in West Virginia. The bill was worked for weeks in the Senate's Education Committee, growing from 21 to 56 pages in length. But Monday, during that finance meeting with three Republican senators absent, Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler moved to postpone consideration of the bill indefinitely. With a majority of Democratic committee members present, his motion was approved. Today, however, Republican leaders tried to find a loophole in the rules to bring the bill back to life. Kessler tried to fight the action.
Once that bill has been postponed indefinitely, that bill is done for the session.
Senator, your point is not well taken. Under Senate Rule 34, any bill, resolution, or business may, by majority vote of the members present, be withdrawn from the committee to which it has been referred or be taken from the table and placed on the calendar of the Senate in such order of business as the Senate may direct.
If it was on the table, I would agree, sir, but this bill is not on the table. It is in limbo.
According to Jeffersonian rules of order, Kessler says his motion during the finance meeting prevents the Senate from taking up the bill for the remainder of the session. The majority, however, holds the position that the Senate is always in charge of any bill, and what a committee decides to do with it is only a recommendation, not a final decision by the body. Veteran Senator Herb Snyder told his fellow members the move was unprecedented and made the bill more likely to be challenged in court, while Senator John Unger warned Democrats such a move made the committee process invalid. Cole, however, stuck to the majority position and called for the bill's discharge.
Question for the Senate is the adoption of the motion that the Committee on Finance be discharged from further consideration of committee substitute for Senate Bill 14 and the bill be placed on first reading. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes have it. The bill will be placed on first reading.
Order.
State your point.
The ruling of the chair and ask that the yeas and nays be taken.
Senator Kessler appealed Cole's decision and demanded a vote be taken. Senator Carmichael moved the question, blocking senators from debating the motion itself. In a vote to sustain Cole's decision, senators voted on straight party lines 18 to 16 to back him. President Cole again called for a vote to discharge the bill from committee. On another party line vote, Democratic senators voted against the motion. Republican senators voted for it. With the final vote, Senate Bill 14 on charter schools was pulled from the Senate Finance Committee and read a first time on the floor. But the fireworks weren't over as senators moved on to the bills on the calendar up for a vote.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I demand the constitutional reading of the bill in accordance with Article 6, Section 29 of the Constitution.
The motion from Senator Bob Beach requires the Senate clerk to read the entire bill instead of receiving a short summary from a committee chair before putting it to a vote. The move is meant to slow down the legislative process. After more discussion and a short recess, senators return to their floor session.
Clerk will read the bill in its entirety.
Engrossed Senate Bill 292.
Senators then voted on and approved six separate bills, including one to assess a $15 per year fee on vendors at farmers markets. More than 35 bills were on second reading in the chamber, some of which received minor amendments. A bill to eliminate the tuberculosis test for teachers and students who are at low risk for the disease was recommitted to the Senate's Education Committee for further consideration. But a controversial House bill was passed over.
Engrossed committee substitute for House Bill 2568, the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act.
The senator from Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask unanimous consent that the bill be advanced to third with the right to amend.
The bill would ban late-term abortions in the state post 20 weeks, except in cases where the mother's health is put at risk. House Bill 2568 is likely to see amendments proposed by Democrats on the floor tomorrow, but a similar piece of legislation passed the chamber last year in a bipartisan manner. That bill was ultimately vetoed by the governor.
The House Judiciary Committee took up Senate Bill 357 today, the Coal Jobs and Safety Act of 2015. It passed the Senate earlier this month. It's a very long and complicated bill with many provisions, and House lawmakers considered a handful of amendments to it. Liz McCormick reports.
There were two amendments to the bill that stirred up some debate within the House Judiciary Committee. Amendment number two, as the delegates called it, was an amendment proposed by Delegate Woody Ireland of Ritchie County. Ireland's amendment addresses when and how and who moves equipment within a coal mine. This amendment adjusts some language related to energized trolley wire, which is a way for miners to move large loads of equipment in shuttle cars. Delegate Tim Manchin of Marion County proposed a rival amendment to Ireland's. In Manchin's amendment, which was referred to as Amendment Number 4, it suggests putting the language back in the bill that is currently law, saying there would be restrictions on how the equipment would be moved. Manchin called Ireland's amendment a rollback in mine safety.
This is a huge rollback in miner safety. To take 70-some mines out of the control of this statute, to say that 70-some mines will now be allowed to move oversized equipment with motors and other apparatuses that are being strained to their limits in carrying that equipment, to remove those from the provisions and to subject coal miners to being in buy of those, where they're going to be exposed to those fumes and fire and all the noxious smoke that comes off of that, is an outrage. It is a rollback in coal miner safety. It should not be permitted. That we have not been given any adequate excuse to do that, and therefore we should reject this. Men have died. Men died to get this statute passed. Men died after this statute was passed. Nine men in Marion and Monongalia County died, I think it was in the 60s or early 70s, if I'm not mistaken, because for this statute. And now we're going to remove that.
Delegate Stephen Skinner of Jefferson County, a fellow sponsor of Manchin's amendment, also spoke against Ireland's amendment number two.
The amendment offered by the gentleman across applies to a very narrow number of mines. The statute as it is right now applies to all mines and is safety focused. We should make the choice for making decisions based on evidence. And we don't have that evidence here today.
Delegate Patrick Lane of Kanawha County supported Ireland's amendment, explaining that Amendment Number 2 was a good middle ground and still addressed all the safety concerns.
The gentleman from Ritchie has offered what I would consider to be a balanced approach to making sure that miners in most of the mines where there's a real safety issue with the movement of equipment are protected but at the same time allowing that equipment to be moved in an efficient manner. And I would just remind people to look at the language that it says that a qualified person has to be in charge of transporting it. And specifically, as we heard yesterday, the primary issue is the energized wire that can create the problem, the real safety issue. And I think the gentleman has addressed that specifically and would ask the committee to adopt amendment number 2 offered by the gentleman from Ritchie and reject amendment number 4.
After the debate, however, Ireland's amendment passed and Manchin's amendment was rejected. Two more amendments were proposed by delegates Manchin and Skinner, one having to do with the diesel commission and inspections, while the other had to do with rail track variance from the face of a mine. Both amendments were rejected. Senate Bill 357 now reports to the floor for its consideration. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Governor Tomlin has vetoed House Bill 2201 relating to net metering. The bill addresses the relationship between electric utilities and citizens that generate their own electricity using solar technology. He also vetoed Senate Bill 335, the Opioid Antagonist Act. The governor cited technical issues with both bills as the reasons for his vetoes. Coming up, we'll find out what bills the LGBT community is following at this session. But first, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow.
Among the bills up for passage, Senate Bill 88, creating the West Virginia Clearance for Access Registry and Employment Screening Program and requiring criminal background checks on applicants for jobs in various medical and personal care settings. Senate Bill 109, allowing veterans organizations to be exempt from rules restricting smoking in indoor spaces, which are enforced by local boards of health. Senate Bill 273, relating to craft beer brewers. Senate Bill 424, to eliminate the statutory requirements for tuberculosis testing for school children and school personnel. Senate Bill 523, the governor's bill to provide limited immunity from prosecution for certain misdemeanor offenses for a person who seeks emergency medical assistance for someone who is experiencing a drug or alcohol overdose. And House Bill 2568, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act.
In October, a decision by the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals forced Attorney General Patrick Morrisey and Governor Tomlin to back away from a lawsuit challenging the state's gay marriage ban. That decision made the practice legal in West Virginia. And that very day, same-sex couples around the state went to their local courthouses to apply for marriage licenses. The win for the gay community doesn't mean all of their challenges are over, however. In fact, our guest this evening says it opens them up to the possibility of more discrimination. Here this evening to discuss that issue and more is Executive Director of Fairness West Virginia, Andrew Schneider. Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Ashton.
Let's start by talking about a bill that the legislature has seen over and over again. Senate Bill 125 this year, it prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation and age in housing and employment. You say that we need this bill now more than ever. Explain that logic to me.
Yeah. Now, while marriage equality is a great thing for West Virginia, it actually puts the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community at greater risk, greater jeopardy, because you can get married on Sunday and then fired on Monday. The fact that our community can get married now, makes us more visible. So, for instance, like any heterosexual, employee going into the office wearing a ring to reflect the fact that they're married, a gay person can now do that. And the fact that they have the ring when they go into work makes it, that more possible that a homophobic employer can fire them because they're more visible. And just like any other heterosexual couple or employee that goes to work and puts the picture of their spouse on their desk, a gay or a lesbian employee is now able to do the same thing. And they can bring their spouse to the company picnic. They can talk about what their family did before or right around the water cooler. All those things makes the LGBT community more visible and therefore more vulnerable to discrimination. And that's why Senate Bill 125 is so urgent.
At your fall conference, you told those in attendance that you were going to try to change your plans a little. And since you haven't been able to get this bill passed through the legislature, let's focus on the municipalities. And
yes,
you've been pushing that. Can you talk about which municipalities you've been working with to try to pass these non-discrimination ordinances? How's that going?
Right. Well, that's an important thing to talk about because, you know, we can't wait for the legislature to act. So we need to put these protections in place on the local level. And communities have taken the lead on that. So right now there are 6 communities that have passed non-discrimination laws that include protection for sexual orientation and gender identity. And there are 2 cities that have campaigns that are in the works. One is Beckley and one is Elkins.
So there was a bill introduced into the House yesterday, though, the West Virginia Commerce Improvement Act, that would ban communities from passing those types of ordinances. What's your reaction to that bill?
Well, this is also known as the Abolishing Local Liberty Bill, because it would basically take democracy out of the hands of local municipalities, where it very much belongs, because this is pure democracy in its truest form. At the local level. This is what the framers of the Constitution, you know, originally envisioned with our democratic republic, a process that would allow local discussion and local debate on issues that were pertinent to those local municipalities. I mean, I'm sure that the legislature would be equally up in arms if, you know, the federal government tried to take their powers away from them. And that's basically what the legislature would do by passing this type of bill to the local municipalities. It's taking democracy out of the hands of their local governments.
I want to quickly get to one more bill, the Youth Mental Health Protection Act, that you all are backing as well. Can you briefly just tell us what that bill does?
Well, this bill would not permit licensed therapists to practice the discredited conversion therapy that exists throughout the country. And conversion therapy is basically the false notion that you can convert a LGBT person, a gay or lesbian, bisexual, or transgender person, and make them heterosexual. That has been discredited by the American Medical Association, it has been discredited by the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association.
And we should mention that bill has bipartisan support in the House, so we'll watch it to see if it
yes.
moves. Executive Director of Fairness West Virginia, Andrew Schneider, thanks so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 2896, prohibiting discrimination in the appointment, promotion, demotion, or dismissal based on sexual orientation. House Bill 2911, to create the Voluntary Political Contribution Act. The bill establishes how a labor organization may collect and use monies for political activities and requires labor organizations to register their funds as a political action committee. House Bill 2919, requiring the Library Commission to survey all libraries and develop a 10-year plan for construction and maintenance. House Bill 2934, repealing the Common Core Standards. House Bill 2938, to require the West Virginia Supreme Court to maintain a searchable criminal database containing copies of all arrests and convictions by all the courts in the state. House Bill 2991, to require the Secretary of State to maintain a record of Freedom of Information Act requests and responses, and exempting internal and external communications received by any member or employee of a public body expressing opinions and mental impressions intended to facilitate deliberation of a matter pending before the public body from the Freedom of Information Act. Among the bills up for passage in the House tomorrow, House Bill 2674, to make homeschooled students eligible for a Promise scholarship without taking the GED test. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 60, requiring the Bureau for Public Health to develop minimum guidelines for training individuals seeking a food handler permit or card that may be issued by local county health departments. House Bill 2202, to provide a more equitable disbursement of funds to county boards of education to lessen the budgetary impact of serving high-cost, high-acuity, special-needs students. And House Bill 2268, removing the severance tax on timber.
Tonight, an excerpt from the upcoming West Virginia Public Broadcasting documentary, Jay, A Rockefeller's Journey. The program will air this summer and trace the senator's 50 years of public service. In the following clip, Jay Rockefeller explains why he left the elite atmosphere of Harvard to travel alone across the world to work and study in Japan. He was 20 years old.
Jay Rockefeller leaves the comfort and prestige of Harvard to teach English at the very new International Christian University in Tokyo, Japan. He also decides to enroll as a student to learn the Japanese language. And all this makes sense. Rockefeller's parents had long worked on developing cultural ties with Japan, not a popular effort among many following World War II. They also made lasting friendships among the Japanese people, including Soichiro Toyota, who decades later would become chairman of Toyota Motor Corporation. As a teenager, Jay travels twice to Japan in the 1950s with his parents. He skips a science class at Exeter Academy in order to take a course on Chinese and Japanese history. So while Asian studies are already of interest to the Harvard student, leaving his senior year for Japan is not a calculated move.
It wasn't, in fact, calculated at all. My reason for going to Japan was I wanted to get out of what I thought I might become if I stayed at Harvard. Getting into something where I not only couldn't speak the language, but where everybody was different, and I was tremendously tall, and they'd never sort of seen anything like that before. So it was the getting out factor, putting yourself in hard situations, tough situations, where you have to survive by your wits and study of the language over a period of 3 years. That's a long time.
While Jay had visited the country before, he could not have known how living as a student in Japan would affect him.
This is 12 years after the end of the Second World War, and they were on the mat. They were down. They were struggling. In the deepest sense, they were struggling. Those were my friends. Those were my roommates. We lived together in the middle of a rice field in a paper and wood shack and walk or bicycle every day, in my case, to learn the Japanese language. Japanese is hard. The written language, 3,500 ideographs, kanji they call it, and it was hard. And that's when you got up really early in the morning, it was cold, and you practiced and you practiced and you practiced and you practiced. And I got good at Japanese. And I went to farms of my roommates, friends' families or their families, which had been in their families for 30 generations, and began to understand what a long, committed history of hard work and hardship brings to people. It was a very personal experience for me, a very deep experience. It was the beginning of putting me on the track to public service.
And so the seeds of what will become the second biggest single industrial investment in West Virginia history, the Toyota Motor Corporation plant in Buffalo, are sown in the late 1950s in a rice field in a wooden house in late night and early morning study of the Japanese language.
Fast forward, and suddenly, what is happening? Toyota is bringing their plant to West Virginia, and who is in the middle making the deal but Jay Rockefeller? He's the bridge.
1,200 jobs, $1.3 billion in investment after a decade of trips and meetings to promote West Virginia, his adopted home. As West Virginia's governor, Rockefeller will set up an economic development office in Japan, a move criticized by many during a national recession. Years later, as U.S. Senator, meeting with Dr. Soichiro Toyota and his staff in Japan, Rockefeller seals the deal for the automotive plant, thanks in part to his knowledge of the Japanese language.
And one of the Japanese said to the other, "This isn't going to work. This state is not the place to put this plant. Have you heard about the labor problems?" And I saw Jay just sitting there listening to this conversation. And then suddenly Jay spoke out in Japanese to the people having this conversation. They realized for the first time, oh my God, he recognized what we were saying, and the room fell silent. Having a U.S. senator who speaks Japanese and writes Japanese was very useful in these discussions. And then we had a high five at the end of that meeting, and Dr. Toyo shook his hand and said, we're going to go to West Virginia. It was really awesome.
A grateful Japan bestows upon John D. Rockefeller IV the Grand Cordon of the Order of the Rising Sun as he begins his final year in the U.S. Senate.
And join me as we salute our very good friend, Senator Jay Rockefeller. Kanpai.
Kanpai.
Two of the people who wanted to come were friends of mine from that place, and they couldn't come because they're older, and they texted me their sort of grief. And I texted them that as far as I was concerned, they were there. They'd always been there for me, and they were there on that night.
We have enjoyed a deep friendship rooted in our mutual values like service and dedication to our family and country.
If I hadn't gone to Japan, would I have been here in West Virginia? I want to say yes, but I can't prove that. I had to get outside of my box, outside of my comfort zone, my privilege zone.
This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.